What is up? Welcome to Canucks Central Game Day Edition. We've been doing this when the Vancouver Canucks play a game Monday to Friday, and we jump on from noon to 1, and we bring you a special guest, and we talk about the game. And yet today, the focus is not as much on what's happening later today at 7 o'clock versus the LA Kings. Batch and Hershey will have your call. We'll talk about so much other things that have gone down in the last 24 hours and what it means moving forward. I'm Bick Nazar. With me is also Jamie Dodd from the Canucks Hour. And also with us, our special guest, you've heard him here many times before, it is Mike Santorelli, longtime NHLer and former Vancouver Canuck. And today, we should also mention former Anaheim Duck under Bruce Boudreau, who is now the Vancouver Canucks head coach. After moves yesterday, the Vancouver Canucks have moved on from both Travis Green and Jim Benning and John Weisbrod, and it is a new era for the Vancouver Canucks. So here on Canucks Central on game days, we do like to tee up what it looks like on the ice, what's happening on the ice. There's obviously big picture questions we are going to get into. And if you want to react, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The smart alternative is at Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. Santo, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, man, it's game day. It's a lot of fun. Obviously, there is plenty to talk about. And so I mentioned that you played under Bruce in the 2015-16 season in Anaheim. So outside of just X's and O's, because we're going to get to that stuff throughout the course of the day. Just in general, like, what is it like to play on a Bruce Boudreau-led team? What kind of connection does he make with players, and how did you feel that connection worked?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind with Bruce is that he's super easy along to get along with, right? He's a great guy, nice guy. He's very approachable. Communicates well. I enjoyed my time playing for him. All in all, just a good coach and a good person as well. And I think the mixture, definitely helps to play for a guy like that. He collaborates well. I think you've heard, other people have spoke and said that they're core guys and have succeeded well under him, but he collaborates well with his players, with senior management. He's not a guy that's going to be, it's his way or the highway. He definitely takes feedback in. And I think as a team, you need to do that in order to succeed.
So why is, okay, just on that too, of seeing some core players succeed, he's had so many different styles of players that have had success too. Obviously we go back to Ovi, and then, Eric Staal's name has been brought up a lot. How is it that he's able to just like get so much out of so many diverse personalities and diverse style types as well?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think he does a good job of adapting to different team identities. I think, if you look at it under Washington, you have Ovechkin, you have Backstrom, you have Kuznetsov, and the style of play there was much different than the style of play in Anaheim when you have the, bigger bodies such as, the Getzlaffs and the Perrys and Kessler and guys like that. So he's able to, play different, come up with different team identities by adjusting to the personnel that he has. So he does a very good job of that.
I'm talking to Mike Santorelli, who will join us for the full hour here on Canuck Central. We're here till 3 o'clock. Francesco Aquilini is also going to speak today to media at 3:30. We'll carry it live here on Sportsnet 650. Bruce Boudreau will talk at 4:15 as well. So let's get down to what it is like to actually play Boudreau-style hockey versus what we've seen so far. Like, what changes are you expecting to see systems-wise for the Canucks here tonight?
Well, first and foremost, like, the defensive side and the D zone, like, it really needs to clean up. I know we've talked about it in the past, but, just watching that Pittsburgh game, it was just,
You've said wrong side on the puck on this show so many times, so that's something I'm excited to see tonight.
Yeah, it's just things for me that, recapping the weekend in Pittsburgh, it was just a lot of watching, right? Losing puck races, not being first on the puck, just throwing pucks away and leading to second and third chances. I think they just need to clean it up. Defense, being good defense, you know, creates offense. And I think if you, we, you know, you start from there, you build that solid foundation, play with just a ton more structure, and I expect that's something Bruce will look to do right off the hop.
And Mike, you know, Bruce Boudreau, he has the reputation among fans of being kind of an offensive coach. He wants to play really up-tempo, run and gun. As we talked about, he's gotten a lot of great offensive performances. But how does he handle, in your experience, the defensive side of things, which, as you said, is obviously an area of concern and something that needs to be addressed for the Canucks?
Well, you know, just going back to what I said previously about the different styles of play in Washington and Anaheim. In Anaheim, you know, there's the year-end awards, the Jennings Trophy, right, to the two goaltenders that have the best goals against average throughout the year, right? And I think that was one of the areas that Bruce really emphasized on our team anyhow, was that how important was it for us to, you know, to win that. Because it's the goaltender's type of award, but it also shows what type of team you are. And, you know, I think he has this, everyone thinks of Bruce Boudreau as an offensive type of coach, but he has the ability to also, you know, clean things up defensively and be sound structurally on the other side of the ice.
So that focus on that award, obviously that's a team award too. It's sound defensive hockey. You know, when you saw the issues over the past 25 games for this Canucks team, what was like the fundamental strategy that you said, oh, this isn't going to work? Is it too much, you know, man to man, you know, for some to, you know, break it down a bit easier? Is it man to man focus? Is it zonal focus? What was it that clearly wasn't going to work?
Yeah, for me, it's just, you know, lack of, and I'm going to continue saying it, for me it was the lack of structure, the lack of stops and starts, kind of guys swinging away. You know, just a great example in Pittsburgh, I think Pettersson got the puck in his own end on the half wall. Well, his winger swing into the middle, strong side winger swing into the middle, he has no outlet, and then he throws it up the middle, turns the puck over, the Pittsburgh Penguins player gets it, and then it ends up in a penalty, and then they're on the power play. So it's just things like that, just being able to support each other more, cleaner breakouts, understanding that, hey, like, this is when I get the puck, I know my teammates could be in this particular spot, and here are my options going into, you know, gaining that puck. Because I really believe that if you clean things up defensively, that really helps out your offensive game.
And so with Bruce now, you know, you played with him under for a full season there. Like, what exactly does Bruce Boudreau hockey look like from, let's say, the goal line out when you have the puck?
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, he wants to have possession. He wants to attack fast. He wants to be a team that holds on to pucks down low, lots of shot volume, and just being over top of, you know, the other team's, the opposing team at all times. Because you create turnovers that way. You create second, you create third opportunities all over the ice. You're able to, attack off the rush in favorable positions. And it just, that, all that kind of playing that way just leads to more offense, right?
Is there, because I think one worry a lot of people have is, okay, this is a short-term move and this is about, you know, improving what the here and now is, because he's only got a two-year runway here with, you know, with his contract status, and people want to see obvious improvement, and it should be possible to create that improvement given where the standards are right now. But how quickly can you actually see this level of change get implemented from, hey, they played 2 days ago and we're in this result of a new coach? How long does it take for a new coach to implement what he wants to do? Part of it is muscle memory. Part of it is repetition and getting used to a new coach's demands. How long do you feel like it might take to before we can kind of see what Boudreau hockey looks like versus what Travis Green hockey look like?
Yeah, I think you start chipping away at it right away. I think I'm sure that morning skate this morning, and you guys probably know more than me, but you probably start implementing some of the, you know, the smaller details and kind of putting in place some of the structure in pregame skate. So, he could possibly have done that this morning. But for me, it's how quickly the group can come together. It's based on the personnel, building a team identity, having his vision – relaying his vision onto the team and having the right personnel to play that style of game. And the quicker the buy-in is, the quicker that the team will come together and be able to improve on the ice.
And, Mike, you know, one part of it is, you know, Bruce Boudreau kind of putting his stamp on the team and implementing his system and getting them, as you say, to buy into the style of play that he wants, the vision he has for the team on the ice. But for the players individually, you know, we know that, you know, obviously certain players here were used in certain roles by Travis Green, and now all of a sudden they might have a chance to craft a new role for them, right? Bruce Boudreau might see them in a different light, might have different ideas about how to get the most out of that player. Is it a nervous spot to be in for a player, or is it exciting? Hey, I've got a clean slate here, and I can go, and I can try to impress this coach and maybe carve out a bigger role for myself.
Yeah, one thing in hockey, your first impression is huge, right? So you have a new coach coming in today. You obviously want to make a great, you know, first impression on the ice, but it's what you do off the ice too. Like, you know, the coaches are always around. They're watching. What are you doing to get ready for the game? What are you doing in your pregame warm-up? How do you come to the rink? What do you act around around the guys? And it's items like that form those really good first impressions. And for me as a player, you know, it motivates you. It motivates you to want to come out tonight, have a great game, you know, have a fresh start. Whatever's happened the first 25 game, put that behind you. And it's a new beginning for you. And in that, you can create, you know, new opportunities for yourself. If you haven't liked the first 25 games and you haven't liked your role on the team, and now here's your opportunity to go out there, be a part of the solution and go from there and see your role increase. And it's just a new beginning for everybody.
So what you're saying is, you know, practice ended about an hour ago. A guy should still be in the room and hanging out. Impressing the coach and be like, hey, coach, I'm still here, putting in the extra work, watching video, all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. Little things like that just go a long way. I think, you know, just looking back on my time, I think with Vancouver, you know, with the Tortorella era, I think what kind of established myself was that very first day in testing and his famous two mile run. And I, you know, I had a good day on that run. And I think ever since that day, just kind of proved to Torts that I was there to work and I was there to do whatever it took to you know, for the team. And I think that why there was such a good player and coach relationship there too.
So what was your time?
I got on. Well, the thing is, the 2 minute run had to be under 12 minutes. I think there was, I got 11:50 something. So, I think me and the twins were the only three that, were able to shed under 12 minutes.
Were they pulling away in the distance, or were you? Because they are notoriously known for their running, especially post career. Were they just equally as impressive in that, or were you close?
Pick, you got to have a little more faith in me. I actually won the race.
Oh, there you go. Well, okay. Well, you got to lead off with that. You can't be like, the twins and me. I know you're trying to be humble, but like, you're not playing anymore. You can be, you know, okay. as brag as much as you want anymore.
That'll be my claim to fame, that I beat him in one area of the game.
That's awesome. Well done. There you go. So they were eating your dust. Well done.
Oh, it was just a lucky day. Lucky day.
They're like, oh, the new guy. We'll let him pass us. It's fine. Okay, so we're talking about, hey, you know, wanting to impress the coach and everything like that. Based off of what we've seen for 25 games, like, how much stock do we put into what we've seen here when we're evaluating these players moving forward now?
Well, I think, you obviously, as an organization standpoint, if that's what you're asking, Bick, but you obviously don't forget, but it's tough. We all know it's tough to get rid of 25 players, right? And the easiest guy to kind of get rid of is obviously the coach, and that's kind of what happened. But now everybody's under the microscope. But, you know, there's an internal review. You know, they want to see is, are these the players we have? The players we have, are they going to be a part of the solution going forward? Was it the style of play under a new regime? Are they going to be able to get back to where they were and possibly take the next step in their careers? So I think that's what you're kind of looking for moving forward and putting aside the first 25 games of the season.
And Mike, I know a player that will have a ton of always has a ton of attention on him, and certainly will now with the new coach, is Elias Pettersson, right? And we've talked at length on this station. I know you and Bick have talked about it, about why hasn't he producing, what's off about his game. And, you know, as we discussed just earlier in the show, Bruce Boudreau has that history of getting excellent offensive production from a ton of different players, right? Throughout his career, that's been one of his calling cards. Knowing what you know about Boudreau and his style, what do you think his message in these early days when he's first getting to work with him, what do you think Boudreau's message to Elias Pettersson is going to be?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's gonna encourage him. I think Bruce, that's why he gets so much of his core players, is that he has a good relationship with them. He's in constant communication with them. He makes them feel good. Like, you know, it's not always about hockey talk. He's in the room and he's joking about keeping things light, just to ease some of the pressure. And you know, as we talked about him being a young guy, Elias Pettersson, I think, you know, it'll be good for him to be under that type of leadership, you know, because he has coached the likes of, you know, Ovechkin and the Backstroms and the Getzlaffs and the Perrys, and you know, I think looking forward to see how that relationship progresses.
Is there a player that when you were playing under Bruce that you feel like Elias Pettersson can emulate, where it's very much like, hey, we had success under this player, and if I was to map out what Bruce hockey looks like now, this is where Elias Pettersson fits in? Or is it more about he'll craft it to fit Elias Pettersson?
Yeah, the first player that comes to mind, Bick, is Ricard Raquel, a former first-round pick with Anaheim. You know, I think during that season, it was kind of that I was there. It was his breakout year. He did a really good job, stepped up. He's the first guy that comes to mind, and obviously he's carved out a pretty good career there in Anaheim, and a guy like Hampus Lindholm. I know they're two Swedes too, but ironically, but he does a good job with bringing up younger guys that have been drafted through the system and helping them find their way and allowing them to play their style of game and what makes them succeed and what got them there.
What excites you then? Because, you know, like, this is about fixing Elias Pettersson to some degree, right? It like, things have gone so poorly this season. He's been at the forefront of it all going sideways. And this new coach brings a new perspective into what he can do. So when you've seen Elias Pettersson through 25 games, what excites you about what might happen moving forward under Boudreau? Is it going to be more speed? You know, we've heard that term of speed through the neutral zone with teams under Boudreau. You know, what part of the ice excites you to see Pettersson now under Boudreau?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see that as these games go on, but I think just the encouragement to continue to do, to play the way he needs to play in order to be successful. One thing about him is that I know he's struggled this year, but he continues to go out there. And in my opinion, he tries. Like, he tries to make get his game back, and that's what that's encouraging to see. And I just think through the better structure with the team play, and I think everyone will thrive. I think he'll get the puck more. I think he'll get the puck in better areas on the ice through the neutral zone, and in the offensive zone, and able to find guys by playing north south types of hockey and stopping and starting, and I think that'll help out him as well.
One thing that's kind of frustrating me at times watching is, you know, too often there are stationary players in the neutral zone, either at the blue line waiting for, you know, a quick, you know, give and go pass or something like that. But the Canucks don't seem to play very fast. They're already not a physically fast team. They don't seem to play very fast. You watch Calgary this year, and under Daryl Sutter, it's the same group of players that's been there for a while, and yet they look so much faster. Is that something we could look forward to here with Vancouver, of, you know, with a new coaching change?
Yeah, I think, you know, with Daryl, I think he's very black and white, and I think he's done a great job in Calgary. I think with him, I think last week in his press conference, he made a comment about, letting the puck do the work, and the puck is faster than the players. So I think by cleaning things up and playing with more structure, like we talked about, that'll allow players to move the puck more quickly and guys receiving the puck in favorable positions and then making that second and third pass to get out of your own end and to get back on the offense and creating chances off the rush and in the offensive zone as well.
Vic Nazar, Jamie Dodd here on Canucks Central, talking to Mike Santorelli, former NHLer, longtime NHLer, and obviously with the Vancouver Canucks and the Anaheim Ducks under Bruce Boudreaux.
And Mike, one of the things I wanted to ask you is we've talked a lot about the Canucks' defensive struggles in terms of defending in their own zone, but on the blue line specifically, one thing the players there, outside of Quinn Hughes and maybe OEL, you know, it's not always clean transitioning the puck. That can be a challenge, is getting the puck to the forwards cleanly, quickly, and allowing those forwards to generate the speed that Bick is talking about. Is that something that you worry could maybe prevent Bruce Boudreaux from really getting this team playing the style he wants? Is that they just don't necessarily have the personnel on the back end to play that really kind of up-tempo attacking hockey?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one of the concerns that I have is you know, their lack of depth, you know, on the back end, and their ability to kind of escape and evade those checks and get their get the puck up to in the forward's hand, you know, and that does play in a big part of the lack of team speed. And one thing I just know, you just see by watching the game, is a lot of pucks are being thrown away rather than, you know, maybe holding on to that puck that extra second, letting the play develop, protect the puck, and move your feet to open up other lanes rather than just getting the puck and just firing it up the boards right away or just throwing it away.
There's other players outside of just Elias Pettersson that obviously might benefit from this, and I'm not suggesting that, hey, look, any players were in the doghouse or anything like that, but there's players that have, you know, slumped so far this season to a great deal, Brock Besser being one of them. What does it feel like to get a clean slate for a player? I'm not sure how many coaching changes you've been through mid-season, but you know, what does that feel like? Of okay, here we go. I can try to build a new rapport with a new coach.
Yeah, obviously it feels good, but you got to look at yourself in the mirror too. Obviously, you know Travis Green's gone, but you got to look at yourself and look what you've done in your body of work for the first 25 games, and just because a new coach doesn't come in, if you don't start changing your game, you're going to continue to struggle. And I think with players on the team, you know, they just got to bring way more of a work ethic. Some of these guys are just, they look invincible out there. So, you know, I'm hoping to see a refreshed set of players out there and players that want to go out there and work and create that really good first impression and be a part of the solution here.
Bick Nazar, Jamie Dodd here on Canucks Central on game days. Again, puck drops at 7 o'clock tonight. Brendan Batchelor, Corey Hirsch will have the call. Sat Dan Randeep will have your pregame show. Francesco Aquilini, Canucks owner, will meet with media later today at 3:30. You can hear it all on Sportsnet 650. We'll continue to break down this game. We'll get into some of the lines and what the power play looked like, and there have been some changes. You already see the Boudreaux effect, and we've talked about some of the positives that might come from this. You know, Bruce Boudreaux, there are some narratives that do surround him as far as, hey, you can get to the playoffs, but can you have success in the playoffs? And does some of that translate into what we might see here? We'll talk about that with Mike Santorelli moving forward here on Canucks Central. If you want to chime in, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The smart alternative is at Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. Back in a minute here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Central. Bick Nazar and Jamie Dodd, also with Mike Santorelli. It is a Canucks game day versus the LA Kings coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. Brendan Batchelor, Corey Hirsch will have your call. Satyar Shah, Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda have your pregame show leading up into the game. Myself and Sat Shah the rest of the way, the intermissions and the post-game show as well tonight. You can always react, 650-650. If you got questions for Mike Santorelli, we'll get to him, longtime NHLer and former Vancouver Canuck and Anaheim Duck as well under Bruce Boudreaux, who is the new face of the Canucks coaching staff. Now, Mike, you know, Bruce Boudreaux's renowned for how much success he has in the regular season. He's a career 635 win percentage. It has been sparkling. His teams, you know, the phrase is, if you want to go to the playoffs, get Bruce Boudreaux. And then what happens thereafter in the playoffs is, you know, anything can happen. It hasn't gone as swimmingly for him in the playoffs. But, you know, we've talked about how he's had success and how, you know, he coached you and what we might see moving here forward in Vancouver. Does anything that we see that happens to his teams in the playoffs that might translate to what we might see here? Or actually, rather, let's start this out simpler. What do you notice of what happens to Bruce Boudreau teams in the playoffs?
Yeah, there's a lot I'm looking forward to seeing. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to seeing is just his ability to adapt. I think in Anaheim, it felt at times we were more of a reactive team where we would always kind of react to the other to the opposing team and rather than being more of a proactive team and letting the other whereas we would dictate the pace of the play and the tempo of the play and how we want to play. But I just felt at times during that season it was just really reactive, tons of line matching and kind of getting guys out of the groove, if you know what I mean. So just like to see if that kind of continues or more of a proactive approach to the game. So that's one thing I'm looking to see, during the next couple months here.
And in the playoffs specifically, Mike, is that kind of the thing that separates the coaches who can consistently win in the playoffs? And look, it's really difficult to do, but that ability to, you know, before the other coach, identify what adjustments you need to make them and kind of make the other team react rather than you always being on the back foot?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's fascinating to see some of these coaches, how they're able to quickly make adjustments throughout the games, whether that be a systems thing or just a personnel, changes in personnel in the lines and during games and in between periods. And I think that's one thing, I'd be looking for throughout the year and hopefully in playoffs as well, is just how he adapts, during games, in series, and kind of just, your best players are human, right? They're not going to be there. They're not going to be able to play at their best every single night. It's humanly impossible, but it's does he have the ability to kind of push those buttons where to still succeed as a team even though the players aren't playing at the top of their games?
Bick Nizar, Jamie Dodd here on Canucks Central, talking to Mike Santorelli, also alongside with us on Canucks Central Game Days. So that adapting to the game in playoff series is something obviously Canucks fans would love to see this season. There's a long road to get to even before we get there. Did you ever feel like maybe he changed from where he was from the regular season to the postseason, or was it fairly consistent to what you're talking about, hey, being a bit more reactive? Was that something that changed in a playoff series, or is that just how you guys played throughout the course of the year?
Yeah, that's kind of how we played throughout the year. Just during that season, the team identity was more of a defensive style game, hard team to play against, big, heavy, a team in Anaheim. We had a lot of bigger bodies and were able to kind of hold possession of the puck. But I just throughout the season, it just felt that it was kind of a bit reactive, where we're this constant line matching playing to the other teams, focusing too much on the other teams, in my opinion, anyhow.
Well, we've seen that here even a lot in Vancouver, where Travis Green was very matchup-centric. He wanted certain guys out for certain players. And I'm just trying to think back even to Saturday. I feel like there was maybe a 15-20-second shift for the Elias Pettersson line. They get an offensive zone face-off, and, okay, Sidney Crosby comes out because it's a defensive zone draw for the Penguins. And no, it's 20 seconds into a shift for Elias Pettersson. He's got an offensive zone opportunity, and here comes Bo Horvat's line. Is that sort of stuff, can that be frustrating for a player, that constant matchup game, to say, hey, I'm trying to get into the flow of the game, and yet here we are, stop starting?
Yeah, I think as a player, it's extremely frustrating. I think every player has kind of been on that side of the stick. And, I think that at times... You got to let your best players play too, right? Like at the end of the day, you're gonna go as far as your best players take you. There's that fine line between finding the balance between, okay, well, I want to make sure I'm not gonna get scored on, and I gotta match up well against the opposing team's top players. But you also gotta let your players play too. The last thing you want to do is have your players play you know, a top player play 11, 12, 13 minutes, like, you know, he's not going to feel the puck. His legs are going to be cold, and, you know, it's not going to be good for anybody.
Is that something, too, when a new coach comes in, Mike, that they really have to keep in mind? Because I'm sure, you know, if you're in Bruce Boudreau's position, obviously you want to put your stamp on this team, right? And there's going to be things you want to adjust. But I'm sure you also have to be careful that you're not micromanaging, right? You're not overwhelming them early with all these tactical changes, that you do still give them the freedom to just go out there, play their game, get in a rhythm, get in the flow early.
Yeah, I think, you know, it could go both ways, I think, to answer your question. Like, you want to come in, you're a new coach, you want to, you know, establish a great culture, a good environment for the team. You know, they haven't had success early on, so you kind of want to change the environment to a positive, confident, and encouraging environment. But at the same time, I guess the question is that what those players need right now? Or do they need a different type of look and to get more out of them? Do you got to take the kind of the micromanaging approach, the hard-nosed approach, and trying to get these players to try to get more out of them, or and trying to get them to elevate their games?
For what we saw today here at Morning Skate, Batch tweeted out the lines earlier today. Pearson skated with Horvat and Hoglander. Dickinson skated with Miller and Besser. Mott with Lamico and Chason. And then put Coles in with Pedersen and Garland. The extra skater was Justin Dowling. Your D pairings were OEL and Myers together. Hughes and Hamonic, who has been recalled to the Vancouver Canucks lineup. Shen with Tucker Poolman. And then Brad Hunt and Kyle Burrows also skated together. So we'll see what the lineup looks like tonight during warm-up and obviously for puck drop at 7 o'clock versus the LA Kings. So Pedersen with Podkolzin and Garland. Now, we've talked about this before when Travis Green put them together, and it felt like a logical grouping to pair these guys up, and you know the styles between Garland and Pedersen feel like they mesh. But Colson and Pedersen have worked together pretty well here these past couple of games. Why will it look different tonight versus what we've seen the past couple of games?
Yeah, I just think, you know, I just like the way Garland's played over the last month or so. You know, he's been very involved, very effective. We talked about his speed, his ability to evade checks and create offense with his tenacity, his speed. And I just think that, you know, personally, I just think that helps Pedersen, you know, open up, find lanes where he could get available, and Garland's a guy that'll find you too, you know, once he beats those guys. So it allows him to maybe create more scoring opportunity on his own, and then also use Garland to his advantage. Podkolzin, you know, he's been good, you know, big body and really effective shot, and he's shown that he has the ability to kind of you know, carry pucks and create opportunities on by himself as well.
What is that like for a young player, just kind of figuring it out? Because I think the version of Vasily Podkolzin we've seen from game one is vastly different than the one we're seeing now. Again, it's early returns into his own career here. But like, what was that first foray for the first 25 games for you, and how did you feel like you developed in that short amount of time?
Yeah, me personally or Podkolzin?
Yeah, you personally.
Yeah, me personally, it took me a bit to get you know, my feet under me in the NHL. I think with Nashville, it was tough to kind of crack. I think we talked about earlier about how, you know, ice time and whatnot, but you know, my first stint, my first 35 games there, you know, wasn't playing much, like 3-4 minutes a night, and the dynamics of the league were much different. You're playing on the fourth line with a to one of your sides is a guy that, you know, is a fighter, right? So the game has changed and it's evolved, and I think it's helped a guy like Podkolzin come out and have some early success, because all four lines can now play, right? There's no more designated scrappers anymore or whatnot, and I think he's had some success being able to play with some really good players, and at the same time he's evolved his game where he doesn't look like a rookie. He looks like a player that belongs.
And with Podkolzin specifically, Mike, you know, we so often hear, and as you said, this is changing, but for a long time, right, NHL coaches often reluctant to trust rookies or young players who are making their first steps into the league. And I thought one of the big takeaways from when the Canucks took the ice at Rogers Arena here this morning was that Vasily Podkolzin had been promoted to the first power play unit with the likes of Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland. on that unit. How did, when you played with Bruce Boudreau, and I know that was a veteran Anaheim Ducks team, but how did you see him kind of relate to younger players, and how much of an opportunity is this for Vasily Podkolzin if he's going to get a chance to go on power play one as a rookie right now?
Yeah, like I said earlier, he's a guy that you could that has those conversations. He makes you feel well. He's approachable, which is a big thing, especially nowadays with how the kind of games evolve too. Is you need to have a coach there that you could approach and give you the straight facts and goods, right? So honest guy, and that's what you want, right? And I think it's huge for Podkolzin to be put in a situation like that. He's earned it. He's deserved it. And since the whole new CBA structure back after the lockout, you need your early draft picks to be able to come into the league and not only just play, but also be able to produce as well. And, the more he evolves, the better it'll be for the Canucks because, at this point in his career, he's at a favorable contract.
If you got questions for Mike Santorelli, text him in 650-650. We'll rattle a couple of more off before we get out on this hour. Bick Nizar and Jamie Dodd here with you. So we bring up the power play. Power play looked a little bit different today. Pedersen and Garland were in the flanking positions, but Colson in the bumper spot, Chase on net front, and Quinn Hughes was up top. Power play two was OEL up top, Miller, Besser, Horvat going from right to left. So Miller in his one-timer shot, Horvat coming off the wall, Besser in the bumper, and Pearson was your net front presence. You played on the power play under Bruce a bit in 2015-16. Or 2015-16. What was your role on it?
At that point in my career, more of a versatile guy. I kind of played a little bit of all over, but in the bumper position mostly. He's had some success on the power play. With the teams he's had in the past, he's had some really good personnel. Just going back to the Canucks power play, I think ever since, even when under Travis, once they kind of split that unit up and had two competitive units, the power play did look better. I like the way Garland comes off the wall and comes down the flank and uses his speed to his advantage. I think he's done a really good job of that. I think one thing that the Canucks can implement, and just looking at effective power plays around the league, is, on Saturday night, the way the movement of the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Boston Bruins is that, they're interchangeable. Like Letang's at the goal line at one point, and Sidney Crosby's at the top of the umbrella. When you watch Toronto and Boston and the constant interchangeability of players creates confusion amongst the PK, and I think that's one thing the Canucks could look to do more so of, just to create some more opportunities and ultimately get have a better power play, better results.
Was that a coaching focus or a message from Bruce when you were playing under him?
No, just something I kind of thought of, right, when watching these power plays. But like I said, 4 or 5 years ago, power plays were more structured.
Change.
Yeah, it really does, Bick. And that's the thing, is that previously, like, everyone has their position. Well, Getzlaf's always going to be the flank guy, and Perry is going to be in front of the net. But now when you're watching, like, even when you're watching the Ducks, like, even Getzlaf, he's interchangeable with Zegras, kind of coming in from the bumper and out to the flank, and that's what the successful power play units do.
I think a lot of people, when they hear the name Bruce Boudreau, they think, oh, well, he came into success with Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals, and people immediately think of Alex Ovechkin in that spot and just hammering pucks home. And so many people have wanted to see Elias Pettersson kind of be that one-time mechanism on this power play. And I think it'll still be a feature, but I think what people don't realize with those Washington teams, and you've mentioned it too here, Mike, is the four other guys do so much work to open up that space for Ovechkin. They draw the eyes, they draw the sticks away of penalty killers, and it enables Ovi to get that shot off. When you look at this power play the way it's structured right now, for what we saw today, again, Chiasson was net front, Garland and Podkolzin were in the middle, Hughes was up top, and then Pedersen in his natural spot where he gets to one-timer it. The one thing that I'm kind of excited about is, for what you mentioned there, Garland coming off the half wall, he's probably the Canucks' best playmaker. And if we're talking about quick passes, more specifically right-handed passes, does that open up another lane to get Pettersson the puck from a different angle?
Yeah, I think so. I think he definitely gets the puck from Hughes up top on top of the umbrella, and here's what I like about Garland coming down the flank with speed. As he comes down the flank with speed, that strong side PK forward needs to make a decision. Is his stick gonna stay in the lane, like preventing the pass up to Hughes, or is he gonna move his stick positioning, and then is that gonna open up that seam pass for Garland to go across the ice to Pettersson? So just a different angle for him to get that one timer off, a different look, maybe, because the goalie still has to respect Garland coming off that flank in the case if he shoots the puck, right? So you know, it just opens up that seam, and then ultimately maybe Pettersson has more time and space to get that shot off, and the goalie isn't cheating onto that side.
And one thing that remained the same from what we've seen under Travis Green today, Mike, is on that first power play unit, Alex Chiasson was in the net front spot at practice today. And, you know, we'll see how long that lasts with a new coach coming in. But what you said was, you know, it used to be guys had their position and that's where you stayed for the whole power play. Now we see so much more movement. And with Chiasson, he's really good at being in front of the net and digging out those loose pucks and screening the goalie and going for the tips. But inevitably, there are times when, you know, he gets the puck in the corner and has to make a play, and maybe he's not quite up to first power play unit level. Is that an area where you look at and say, you know, for this power play to get the most, to reach its potential, they have to find another solution at that position? Maybe somebody who can play in different positions if the need arises when they're out there.
Yeah, I think so, but at the same time, like you got to play with what you have too, right? And Bruce does a good job of putting guys in roles, to succeed, and he does a good job of understanding what certain players do effectively and placing them in certain positions on the team to have success individually and as a team. So I think maybe he's going to start that way, and these are the adjustments that we talked about earlier, is that okay, well, we're starting with him in front of the net, but maybe as the game goes on or as games go on, maybe we need different there's different looks there where, I don't know, does Pod Colson go in front of the net and he has the ability to take the goalie's eyes away and find tips and screens and still has the ability to kind of be interchangeable with Pettersson when he goes from low to high down to the goal line, right? So we'll see.
Bick Nizar, Jamie Dodd here on Canucks Central. It's also talking to Mike Santorelli. Handful of minutes here, so if you got a question for Mike, text it in 650-650. We'll get to a couple right now. Actually, before we do that, I want to get your reaction, because the way we got here was there was a fan revolt to some degree on Saturday night, and it's ugly to see, and a jersey gets thrown on the ice, and it was quickly scooped up by a Penguins player, Brian Dumoulin. What is that like for a player? Like, what are you thinking when a jersey gets thrown onto the ice?
Yeah, no, I've been a part of it. I think we talked about it in the past, but in Toronto, it's definitely not a good feeling. You want to go out there every night and you want to play hard, and fans are passionate and fans want to see success, and especially in a Canadian market. For me, anyhow, like you want to be playing in a Canadian market just because there's. The fans are so passionate. Every game means something. Every shift means something. And, that's just something, you just don't want to see.
Send us your text, 650-650, if you got a question for Mike Santorelli. Again, 650-650. A couple of thoughts here on Chiasson. We've already kind of answered that one. Tanbeer wants to know just how the leadership group worked in Anaheim with Bruce. Was he very hands-on, or did he kind of let the players do their own thing?
Yeah, he gives the players their freedom to do their thing. I think one thing in Anaheim was the leadership there with Getzlaff and Perry and Cam Fowler, they've been there for a while, and Kessler was there as well. And then they had, even Kevin Bietzka was there too, right? So the leadership group was good. He trusted that, and I think he just does a good job in knowing when to be involved and kind of when to let the team be a team.
People want to know. We were talking about the 2 mile run earlier. People want to know where the goalies ended up on this 2 mile run.
Oh, I don't remember. To be honest, I don't remember. I'm trying to think. I'm not sure if they all did the run. I think maybe they would have been. They had the option. Maybe I can't remember. I wish I know.
That's funny. 650-650 if you want to keep your thoughts coming in for Mike Santorelli. Okay, someone's texting in because we've used a couple of hockey terms here. You were talking about umbrella, flank, bumper, all great hockey terms. What do they mean, LOL? Okay, so umbrella, again, you can take us through it, but if you do like a top-down look of a power play, you can see kind of the stem of the umbrella and then the how it envelopes the entire
spokes.
Stem.
Yeah, the spokes.
Exactly.
There you go. The guys on the flanks,
yeah. Exactly. So at the net, you have well for the one unit for Pedersen's unit tonight, you have the stem is you know you have Chiasson at the net, and then you have Podkolzin at right back, Podkolzin in the bumper
yep.
area.
Yep.
And then you know Quinn Hughes at the top of the umbrella, and then to the flanks to the sides of the umbrella, you have Pedersen and Garland.
So we hope that clears that up, but I always appreciate your text coming in here, 650-650. This one from Greg the Dairy Farmer. Do players coach work best in the regular season and an X and O? Oh, sorry. Do players' coaches work best in the regular season and X and O's coaches work best in the playoffs?
That's a good question. I think for me, it's I think the coaches – the best coaches who have the ability to win are the coaches that have the best. They feel the game. They see the game. They know how to react. They know how to adjust. They know how to make those in game in series adjustments that pay you know huge dividends. They're proactive guys. You know, look at John Cooper in Tampa Bay. Look how much success he's had with different looks on his team as well. Right, early on, they struggled to get to the cup or to win the cup, and now they've had a ton of success. So he does a very good job of not only on the ice but off the ice as well.
Santo, always appreciate it, man. This is fantastic, and it's going to be exciting to see what sort of changes the Vancouver Canucks look like on the ice. We'll talk again later this week as there's another game day on Wednesday, so we'll do another Canucks Central game day edition, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Look forward to seeing the new regime.
For sure. That's Mike Santorelli, who will log off here for Canucks Central. Bick Nazar, Jamie Dodd, we continue till 3 o'clock. We'll do some open boards as well, but we want to talk about a couple of things that have gone down over the past 24 hours. It's more than just what's happening on the ice. Some big picture things, and Francesco Aquilini is going to be speaking to media later today. First time where he's meeting the assembled media in some time. It's been seven, eight years since the last time he has done that. We'll get into it all coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.